Today is Thursday, November 19th, 2020, and I am a senior at Arizona State University, and I'm conducting an interview with of Apple Valley, Minnesota, regarding COVID-19 and quarantine, most specifically how the pandemic has affected her three children, their education, and their mental health. Thanks for being with me.
No worries.
So how long have you been living in Minnesota?
Been living in Minnesota for almost four years.
And where did you live before Minnesota?
Before Minnesota, we lived in Corpus Christi, Texas for 2 years, and before that, New Zealand.
So what has it been like to experience the pandemic as an immigrant?
It has been really interesting watching two countries and very different ways that they have handled it. It has been really confusing sometimes because we have received different healthcare advice from two different governments. And so we've had to make a choice as to which government and which set of health ministers or health, health officers that we're actually going to follow. And because the countries have had such different approaches, it's been frustrating to be in a country that we feel like missed the opportunity to handle it better.
So which country's health ministers do you find yourself following?
So we tend to follow the ones in New Zealand who have closely following what the World Health Organization has been recommending. They've been very clear in their communication, and they've been very clear when there have been changes to advice, why or how that change has come about, as they're very science and data driven. The health ministers here, we have found various messages depending on what government organization, ever changing but not understanding the reasons for change, the political influence on the advice, and the lack of transparency around where they're getting this advice or what data they're actually using.
Earlier in the year, it was not possible for you to travel back to New Zealand, correct?
Yes.
So what was it like knowing that you could not leave the country during the pandemic, leave America?
It was when we're registered with the New Zealand government as citizens of their country in case there's ever an emergency or there's a natural disaster and New Zealand needs to take stock of where their citizens are. So when we get email alerts, because we're all signed up, I'd actually get 5 email alerts that we have a certain amount of time to get home to the country, or email alerts that the borders were now closing. So every time we've had those, it has increased anxiety and made the whole thing feel a lot more isolating. You feel cut off from, you always have an escape plan or an exit plan, and we feel like for the first time we've been cut off from being able to get out of the country within 24 hours if we ever needed to.
So were you able to prepare for quarantine at all, you and your family?
As in like get food supplies and stocks?
Yeah. Yes. Was there anything you did, or were you just?
Oh, like, yes. So I read a lot of international news. So in January, I started seeing the first stories of COVID end of November, December last year from a British newspaper. And it was just down the very bottom of the newspaper page about a virus in China. So I wasn't really, I'd read the headlines and not really click on it. About January, when it traveled across to Europe, I started paying a lot more attention. 2 weeks before that week of March 10th, I did a stock up of food because I was sure that a lockdown was coming, but didn't say much to anyone because, you feel like a bit of a crazy person. And then when it all happened, that Wednesday night that Trump shut the borders, that Thursday, and who was it? Tom Hanks who got COVID? All of those announcements came on that Wednesday night. I was feeling pretty prepared. I kind of knew where we were going. We had stocked up on toys and supplies and food So we weren't that surprised, but only because of the fact that we'd paid attention to overseas as opposed to understanding what was happening here.
Okay. So before COVID, what was a typical school day like for your kids?
So before COVID, they'd be up at 7. We'd be out the door at 8. They would walk to school. I would meet them at the end of school at 2:20. We'd come home for whatever, you know, afternoon activities. They were in school 5 days a week with their teachers, minimal homework, if any, done at home, maybe a spelling list. I kept a bit of an eye on particularly our eldest son's education, but, you know, wasn't super involved. And this year, our youngest, who is 3, was supposed to start preschool for 2 days a week, 9 till 2:30, which obviously hasn't come to fruition.
What after school activities were they involved in?
We had swimming, karate, and then our oldest had speech therapy. Our youngest had speech therapy. And that's it, I think.
And have they been able to continue any of those?
So we stopped karate and swimming from March through till September. And then we started again in karate and swimming. And we stopped them in that 2 weeks ago, when we could see that the case numbers were starting to rise again. The swimming lessons, we'd only had them in semi-private with just our 2 boys, so we felt that was relatively safe. Karate is all masked up and they were socially distanced in smaller classes. And our daughter did gymnastics September till October, November as well.
So now with COVID, what is your typical school day now?
So now we are up at 7. At 7:40, our kids sit down in front of their tablets where they start their morning meetings and go into Zooms. We have Zooms and activities until 2 o'clock. Our boys are on different schedules, so lunch kind of lasts from 11 till about 2. And the boys have got different Zooms at different times. And then we have a break for about an hour and a half. And then we now have various therapies every afternoon, except for Thursdays.
And are those therapies via Zoom as well?
No, occupational therapy is done in person. Vision therapy is done in person. Speech therapy is done online via Zoom. And cognitive behavioral therapy is done on Zoom.
So can you explain to me what it was like to transition from in-school learning to distance learning?
So I've never planned to be a homeschooler. We family planned to never have 3 children home at the same time. Our children are 2 to 3 years apart for that very reason. So it has just become a lot more, I feel like a personal assistant. At breakfast time, I brief my children on what's happening that day, who's got what Zooms and at what times. My oldest son also does speech Zooms and gifted and talented Zooms through the school district as well. And I am there in the background from, you know, listening to what tasks they need to do. I am also trying to homeschool our 3-year-old, so to keep her occupied as well as keeping our house going. And then there is the social, physical, emotional burden of sometimes they need to spend time together, sometimes they really need to spend time apart. Have I exercised them? Have they had enough water? Have they, you know, it's things that were passive concerns before are now major concerns. One of the perks of it has been getting a front row seat to our oldest son's schoolwork. He is neurodiverse. And because he was home and I was able to watch his schooling within the first 2 weeks of emergency schooling in March, I started to suspect that he was dyslexic. And that access I wouldn't have had in the classroom. Looking back on his school reports, there's no indication that the school was concerned about it at all. That hadn't come through. It was new information to us, but because of distance schooling, I had access, you know, had that front row seat. So now I know exactly where my kids are on every single part of their education, because that's what I do now. It's what my life has become.
Do you think it will be hard to distance yourself from that once they go back to in school? Do you plan on putting them back in school?
Yes, they will be going back to school. I think there is definitely some perks to have, you know, having had them at home. It'll be really interesting to watch them go back, because, you know, in conferences, I feel a lot more like empowered to know exactly where they are with their schooling, at least now and probably for the next year or so. And then that distance will come naturally anyway. It's definitely put me in a better place for negotiating IEP conditions. It'll be interesting for the kids too. My kids have become very independent learners. At the beginning in March, they were spoon-fed. They wanted to know exactly how to write the title, exactly do they underline it, do they write the date. But here, the teachers were in the date on this side. Everything was, what do I do now? What do I do now? What do I do now? And now, 8 months later, it's like, oh, I couldn't find this, so I just did it this way. And they've adapted too. So I think it's going to be interesting for the kids going back to school. How is a teacher going to take a whole bunch of independent learners when our school system encourages spoon feeding for various reasons, including valid ones like behavior management? Is going to be a really interesting transition for everyone, including the kids, who I think will find it frustrating when they solve a problem and are told off for not following direct instructions.
So it sounds like the kids are busy at home.
Yes.
Do you think that they, you mentioned they're better independent learners. Are they better at occupying themselves now than they were before COVID?
No. So I couldn't answer that fast enough. So we were a screen-free household before COVID. So our kids were very good at independent play, because we did have some outside, out of school activities. When they were home, they're in separate grade levels. They're excited to see each other. They want to play. They'd go outside and play for a couple of hours. Now it's, what can we do on the tablet? What can we do here? Can I do this? Oh, that's on the tablet. Oh, can I do this then? Oh, that's on the tablet. I don't know what to do. I'm bored. There's a lot more wanting to have their time filled, like I'm a cruise director. There's also, like, some days they are sick of the sight of each other and other days they're not, and managing that. We haven't really had that problem before. So definitely we've utilized the use of audiobooks on the weekends, because the kids can turn on the audiobooks, put on the headphones and go and play in their rooms, and it gives them a chance to feel like they're getting space even though they aren't. And that has definitely helped. And we try to get outside as much as we can for the same reasons. Try to create the illusion of space in their physical world, and hopefully it'll help them feel like they're getting a bit of space personally.
How has your role as a mother changed during the pandemic? I know you've mentioned cruise director and personal assistant.
It's become a lot more than just the, like, social emotional stuff at the end of the day. It's from 7 a.m. until 7:20, bedtime, you know, sun up, S-O-N, to sundown, S-O-N. My days of constantly managing where everyone is and all of the different situations, a lot more crisis management than what we were getting to the stage with kids that were 8, 6, and 3, where we were heading into more passive parenting. We didn't have to be there all the time. They weren't going to climb the drawers anymore. They weren't going to help themselves to a knife to cut an apple. They have all those skills. But instead of going into passive parenting, we've had to really up our game again, as though we have toddlers, to manage and maintain crises before they break out. So we've had to become a lot more active again after a kind of moving out of the under 5 years.
Switching gears, how has it, or what was it like watching New Zealand recover quicker than the United States, or a handle it differently than the United States.
It was reassuring to know that our family and our friends are safe. We don't carry the same mental burden that our friends here do because we don't have to worry about our parents. They're safe. And, you know, I was FaceTiming my dad yesterday and he had a friend over visiting, and I didn't have to worry about the fact that my dad had a friend over visiting, even though my dad has a heart condition. We don't have to worry about my father-in-law going and hanging out with his buddies or anything like that. So there is the relief that that portion of our life is contained and safe and happy and healthy, and they're getting on with it. There's frustration that at how different things could have been here had they had a regular leader, a regular leadership, and if truth hadn't been attacked and distorted so much that there would be people who don't even, you know, aren't willing to follow along with political figures, and that political figures have been changing recommendations because of political pressure. But mainly just relief, actually, that there is a safe place, that it can be done, that we could still go home. If we absolutely had to, it would be more expensive and it would be harder to get there, but we still have a place in this world that doesn't have that. But mainly relief that our people are safe.
What would school be like for your kids if you were back in New Zealand right now?
Absolutely normal. They have only in the last week introduced masks on public transport. And that's the only place you have to wear a mask. They don't have any community transmission, but they decided to bring masks into public transport because it's the hardest place to track people. If they're, you know, you don't remember exactly which bus you caught 3 weeks ago. If there was a case on the 277 bus or whatever, you won't remember if you caught the 718 or the 723 or whatever. So they've introduced that there. So the kids would be at school. They'd be doing their extracurricular activities. Life would be completely normal as a New Zealand kid. It's something COVID happened there. COVID isn't happening like it is here. Like, it's something that they had. It's something, hey, remember when we had COVID? And when I talk to my family and friends over there, they'll say, back when we had COVID. And it's just a crazy, it's like far out, because, you know, we are just entering COVID, really. I spoke to my mum yesterday. My parents are church leaders, and they said, you know, there are still impacts. They only had a 6-week lockdown and then a 2-week lockdown. But my mum said the other day she hasn't shaken hands with anyone since it started, that she hasn't hugged anyone. And in our culture, hugging and a kiss on the cheek is quite common, particularly with the Pacifica people. And so there's none of that in their church anymore. And she said she's still... we'll watch a movie and kind of think, oh, they're all really close together, even though there is no social distancing there. She said that she still feels that there's an impact. So I'm interested to see, for our kids who are going to live it for at least a year, it's going to take a while for that impact to diminish.
Mm-hmm. One last question. If you could go back to you like 1 year ago, what advice would you give yourself to handle the pandemic?
To handle the pandemic, in the beginning, have a lot of craft supplies and creativity, that get into podcasts earlier because they're great distractions. You know, I feel like we've done okay, and that's a hard, you don't say that to many people because there are lots of people here who are not doing okay. I think it helped that I've found some things that are outlets for me. I think it helped that my husband was already work from home, so we didn't have a relationship adjustment that some of my other friends had to make. It wasn't like all of a sudden I had to deal with being around my husband 24 hours a day. I was already used to that. We also don't have the stress of family and friends, like, well, some friends here, but like, our loved ones are safe. Our loved ones aren't pressuring us to do things outside of our COVID comfort zone. So we've also, for six years now, there are things that America does that we don't do in our family. So we are used to just ignoring what the world does and doing our own thing. And so that we haven't had the same kind of social pressure. Like if we don't want to do something here, we just don't do it. And so we haven't had that same kind of pressure, but what advice would I give to myself? I guess I don't really know. That's a very hard question. I think we've done the best that we could and we've made some good decisions along the way. I guess just prepare for the long haul, like that it was, it's going to last as long as you suspect it's going to last at the beginning, and that actually living history is quite tiring. And all those people that kept journals and diaries through their history did the historical world a great service, because I'm not doing it for the next generation of historians because it's too tiring. So those women that did those things were pretty incredible for doing that. And I mean, I guess it's a different era where people did take, because we have photographs to take those memories, and maybe I would have, but they did history a great service by keeping those records, because it's, I can't imagine doing this and keeping historical records.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I'm going to stop one second.